It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. After 2 years of trying to conceive, Jane Roper got the news that she was not only pregnant, she was pregnant with twins. Excited and a little bit terrified, she looked around for guidance and did not find what she was looking for. Now, 3 years later, she's written the book that she wishes she could have read at the time. It's called Double Time, How I Survived and Mostly Thrived Through the First 3 Years of Mothering Twins, and she is with me today. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And let's go back to when you discovered that you were not only pregnant, you knew that you were pregnant, but you discovered that you were having twins. How did you respond?
Well, my initial thought was, oh gosh, this is not what I was hoping for at all. And I was kind of terrified, both in the, you know, the very physical medical sense. I am not a big person. I'm 5'3" and change, and I was trying to imagine how I would fit two babies into my body. And I worried about some of the health risks, but I also felt, you know, I was worried, is this going to take over my life completely? You know, having one baby is a big enough adjustment, but having two all of a sudden, I thought, wow, am I ever going to be able to go back to work as I was planning? Am I just going to be buried in under dirty diapers and Cheerios and things all the time? So, and the logistics of it, frankly, were just scary. The thought of no sleep. I like sleep. I need sleep. That was a little intimidating as well.
I love your description of how you were waiting to find out what your husband's reaction was.
Oh, yes.
And you were really scared about that.
I was, yeah. Because I felt in a way, you know, one of the things I write is it was my lazy ovaries that were to blame for this, you know, and was he going to be sort of not just shocked and maybe disappointed, but almost angry at me for getting us into this situation. But it turns out he was surprised. He was happier than I was about the whole thing. He thought, hey, we get two kids in one fell swoop. He was an only child and had always wanted a sibling when he was growing up. So he felt strongly about us having two kids. And he thought, hey, this is efficient. Here we go.
And I loved his comment that he was worried. He wanted two kids, but he was worried that you guys would have one and then not get around to having the other.
Yeah. And I see that being an issue for some of my friends who had one child and then they think, oh gosh, when is the timing going to be right to have the other one? And do we have to go through this whole baby thing all over again? And we didn't have to do that, which was nice.
I have a friend right now who's pregnant with her third child, and she and I have been talking a lot about the questions that people ask you when you're pregnant.
Yes.
And people do, they're excited because yeah. They see a pregnant woman. And so they'll ask you things,
yes,
incredibly personal questions. And I've only been pregnant with one child at a time, but it sounds like when you're pregnant with twins, those questions get even more personal.
They absolutely do. Actually, if it's okay with you, can I read a little bit about this?
Sure,
from my book?
Sure.
Almost every woman who's ever been pregnant has a story about someone touching their belly uninvited. But belly touching isn't the only invasion of personal space that happens when you're in that most delicate of conditions. When you're pregnant, it's as if suddenly the whole world is a small insular village, the kind with a well in the square and a council of elders and chickens running everywhere. And everyone feels they are entitled to make folksy chit-chat about your body, your family, your sex life, etc. This is doubly the case, as are so many things, when you're having twins. The number one question I was asked while pregnant was, hands down, do twins run in your family? It sounds innocent enough, and maybe I'm being paranoid here, but I always got the feeling that people who asked it were probing to see whether or not I'd had fertility treatments, especially when their follow-up question was, after I replied no, or more likely, now they do, was, so, were you surprised? To me, it sounded like what they were really asking was, were you surprised or did you know that this was possible since you had big, fat fertility treatments? So that was a common probing. I wasn't ashamed of the fact that we had had fertility treatments, but I felt like, well, it's kind of personal. You know, mm-hmm. I don't mind telling you if it's my decision to tell you, but I kind of, you know, I found it annoying when people asked.
Especially when it's someone you don't know at all.
Yes. Oh, yes. And that happened all the time. Well, that definitely did.
Paint us a little bit of a picture of your life at the time when you and your husband conceived, because you mentioned people not knowing whether it's the right time to have a child. You had sort of put it off for a little while, and then you decided it's never going to be the right time to have a child, so we're going to just do it now.
Yeah.
And where were you, and what were you doing at the time?
Well, we were, you know, in our early 30s. I'd actually just both of us had just gotten back from Iowa, where I'd done my MFA in creative writing at the University of Iowa. And we were sort of settling back into more or less the life we'd had before, where I was working as an advertising copywriter. I was working part-time at the time, and I was also working on a novel. And my husband, who's a musician and singer-songwriter, was still chasing that dream. He's actually doing quite well at it now, and also working part-time. So we had this, you know, sort of semi-bohemian life, as I called it in the book. But, you know, we weren't making a ton of money. We were living in a rented place. And I think we thought, well, you know, it's not like all of a sudden in the near future we're both going to be rich and famous and our life is going to change, you know, overnight. So we thought, well, you know, let's do this now we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out as we go.
And you also described how your biological clock really started ticking during that time that you were in Iowa. What changed in you?
You know, it's hard to say. I think part of it may have been purely biological. I don't know if maybe, I feel like this happens a lot once women hit 28 or 29, all of a sudden it's bing, all of a sudden, I think I might want to start thinking about having a family. But I also felt like it felt like something was missing for us. I felt like we were happy and we were plugging along, but oftentimes I would feel a sort of emptiness or feeling like I kind of would like to be responsible for someone else besides myself. I would like to care for someone else. I also, when I was in Iowa, I frequently helped babysit for a friend of mine who had an adorable baby boy, and I think that helped bring the bug on.
But you weren't one of those people growing up or as a young woman that often thought about, when I am a mother, it doesn't sound like this is the kind of thing that you obsessed on as a young woman.
No, not at all. I think I always wanted children, but in a very abstract way. It was always someday far off in the future. It wasn't something that was, you know, a driving passion and, you know, a force in my life. And actually, my husband and I were married for 5 years before we really even thought about it.
One of the things that I love, the story that you tell in your book about when you discover that you're pregnant with twins and you do start casting around for information. You're clearly someone who turns to books and other sources for information to help you through many situations. Mm-hmm. And you find a group for parents of multiples, and you actually went to one of their support group meetings, although you were only pregnant, and these were all people who had already had their children.
Yes, to
get a preview of what you were looking at here.
Yeah, and it was a little bit scary. You know, I can read a little bit about that as well, because it was kind of funny. There are these mother of twin clubs all around the country, and they're great, actually, if you're pregnant with twins or have twins, because it's all these other women who are in the same boat, and there's a lot of support they can offer. They have great used clothing sales, but it was also a little scary. So I joined one of my local mother of twins clubs, and I decided to go to one of their meetings for sort of a preview of what I was in for. But as I write here, in retrospect, this was a mistake. Before I even got inside the house where the meeting was being held, I felt out of my depth, parking my battered 10-year-old bumper sticker emblazoned Honda Civic among the new model minivans and SUVs lined up outside, each of them equipped with two car seats. This, I thought thinkingly, is my future. But there was no way we could afford a minivan or SUV on our semi-employed artist salaries. Not to mention that I didn't want to have to drive a minivan or SUV. The earth. But the fact that Alistair needed to push the driver's seat of our small Japanese car back practically to the trunk in order to get his big old American legs inside did not bode well for fitting two infant seats in the back. Once the meeting got started, I felt better. The women I met were perfectly nice and down to earth and congratulatory. You're going to do just fine, they assured me over tea and cookies, of which I ate approximately 12. It's hard, but it's completely worth it. But soon enough, the war stories began. Tales of going 48 hours without sleep, cracked nipples and thrush, pairs of colicky babies who took turns screaming for 3 hours straight, not to mention the complications of pregnancy and birth, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, bed rest, babies born prematurely, and spending harrowing weeks in the ICU. But congratulations, they told me, smiling fondly as I left. It's worth it, really. We're dead, I told Alistair when I got home.
Well, I think with any parent, really, not knowing exactly what you're getting into probably is a good thing at the start.
Yes.
But I can only imagine that is even worse when you're having twins. And I'm talking with Jane Roper today. She is the mother of twins. She's a blogger. You can read her blog at janeroper.com. It's called Baby Squared. And she's just released the book, Double Time, How I Survived and Mostly Thrived Through the First 3 Years of Mothering Twins. And if you are a parent of multiples and would like to share some of your experience with us today, give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And it sounds like your pregnancy was a very healthy pregnancy and for the most part, uneventful.
Yeah, I was really lucky. Everything went really smoothly. The only little incident was I fainted on the subway once, so that was a little frightening. But other than that, it was really uneventful, and I went to full term for 36 weeks is considered full term for twins, and mine were born at 37 weeks. I didn't have a C-section, and they were very healthy, and I was lucky. Yeah, great.
When you describe the birth, it sounds like the fact that you were having twins made it extremely difficult for you to insist on at least wanting to try to deliver the babies vaginally.
Yeah, it was tough. The assumption was really that, you know, I would get an epidural as soon as I got to the hospital, and 50% of twins are born via C-section, so they wanted to make sure, even though my babies were both head down, so it didn't look like I'd need that, they want to make sure that you're ready in case an emergency C-section is necessary. So they like to, they prefer to hook twin moms up to epidural immediately. It turns out I needed that epidural. It was really painful. And in the end, I ended up getting it, and I'm so glad I did. It made things much easier.
You actually delivered the girls in the operating room?
Yeah, so that's standard procedure, at least in, Massachusetts at the hospital I delivered at, because, again, if there's a need for an emergency C-section or any other emergency, they want to make sure that you're in the OR and ready to go. And there was it was amazing the number of people who were in there. it was two doctors, two anesthesiologists, two pediatric nurses, it was literally probably 12, maybe 15 people. And what was so funny was while I was going, pushing, they kept coming in and introducing themselves, as if I really needed to know the names of the pediatric nurses and anesthesiologists. Like, we're trying to give birth here, and you're coming in and shaking my hand. It was pretty funny.
I can only imagine that must have been terrifying, though, to be in an operating room while you're going through labor. Did it feel like they're inevitable that you would have surgery?
It's funny. I was so determined not to have the surgery, and I was so determined that it didn't feel inevitable to me. I knew I had to give birth in the OR. I knew that was standard practice, but I'd also heard from a lot of women who hadn't had C-sections. So I was fairly hopeful that I'd be able to do it the old-fashioned way. But I wasn't, I wouldn't have been overly distraught if I did have to have a C-section. I wouldn't have felt defeated or like I'd missed out on anything. As long as they were healthy and I was healthy, then, mission accomplished.
You did give birth to healthy twin girls. And you also write about the point during your pregnancy at which you discovered that you were having twin girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that scared you. What was it about having girls that was scarier to you than it would have been to think about having boys.
Yeah, isn't that strange? I don't know. I guess because girls are just so much more complicated, I think. And it was particularly the idea of two pre-adolescent and adolescent girls, which is a little intimidating because, you know, I know what girls are like at that age. I was one. And then when you have two of them, you know, the fighting or the dynamics between them, you know, it was just a little intimidating. And I think I probably erroneously it felt like, oh, well, boys, you know, it's just easier. I'll never get into really complicated, weird dynamics with them. They won't hate me when they're teenagers, as girls often hate their moms. But now that I have girls, it's great. I love it. I can't imagine it any other way. Although we'll see what things are like once they're 13.
I really related to what you were saying with that, though. My husband and I both went through similar reactions when our first child is a girl, and when I discovered that I was having a girl and I had been convinced that I was having a boy. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the pressure, there felt like so much pressure because I knew all of the things that I had gone through. And I, of course, want to protect her from going through all of the horrible things that I went through as a teenager. And the pressure of being the role model
seems
overwhelming.
Right. And knowing how to draw that line also, I think, between being a confidant and friend and being an authority figure and a mother. I think it's tricky.
And times two for you.
Yes. Yes. Doubly complicated.
When the girls were born, you were expecting this sort of transformation, this moment of falling completely and utterly head over heels in love with your babies that many women talk about experiencing when they give birth. It took you a little while.
It did.
How did that feel?
Well, I was disappointed and I felt guilty, I think. I felt, gosh, I'm not madly in love with these babies right away. Is something wrong with me? Does this mean I'll never feel madly in love with them? And I don't know, maybe it had something to do with the fact that it was twins that I couldn't, you know, you hear a lot of women say, oh, I just love to just hold my baby and gaze down at her and, you know, stare at her little face sleeping. And you can only do that so much with twins because, you know, one is sleeping beautifully in your arms and you're staring down at it, and then the other one starts crying and needs to be fed. So you can't really have that kind of fixation. But eventually, you know, once they started smiling and being more aware of my presence and laughing, oh, my gosh, you know, I did start to tumble head over heels and started to really feel like a mother. It's not a shift that for me happened overnight. You know, here I was a young, married, childless woman, and then, oh, my gosh, I have these two babies in my life. I didn't instantly feel transformed, but I did gradually, and I definitely do now.
Well, you write about that feeling when you went out to a coffee shop just for a break of almost being disappointed that you didn't feel like a different person.
Yeah. It was sort of like, well, you know, this is sort of exactly where I was 6 months ago, you know, maybe in the same coffee shop reading or doing some work on my computer. And it felt really surreal, almost unbelievable to me. I have these little babies back home. It was definitely a strange feeling.
We'll continue our conversation in a moment. My guest is Jane Roper. She is the author of the new book, Double Time, How I Survived and Mostly Thrived Through the First 3 Years of Mothering Twins. She's also a blogger. Her blog is called Baby Squared, and you can find it on Babbel.com. You can also find it on JaneRoper.com. And we've put up a link on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. And of course, you're welcome to join our conversation. If you have questions or if you're a parent of multiple children, as so many people are today, if you have twins or more in your life, you can share your experiences as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. And here with me today is Jane Roper. She is the author of the new book, Double Time, How I Survived and Mostly Thrived Through the First 3 Years of Mothering Twins. She's also a blogger, so you can find out about years 4 and 5 as well on her blog, which is called Baby Squared. You can find it on Babbel.com. And when your children were born, Jane, I get the impression that you in many parts of your life are a little bit of a, I'll use the term control freak, not in a bad way, but you certainly wanted to be prepared for every eventuality. And mm-hmm. one of the things that you were really worried about was depression, because you had suffered from depression in your past. And I get the impression that you were kind of waiting for it to hit you.
Yeah. I was definitely on high alert. And, you know, before, when I found out I was pregnant, I sort of assembled my team. You know, I made sure my psychiatrist knew what was going on. And I actually entered a study that was going on for women with depression and following them for postpartum depression. But to my delight and surprise, I didn't really feel any of that. I had a great first year with my girls. I had a few days of baby blues and mood swoops right after they were born, which is typical. But it wasn't until they were around 13 months old when I weaned them. And right after I'd done that, I got walloped with depression. And it was totally unexpected, because I'd never heard anything about weaning bringing on depression. And something else that I think there's more information about it now, and, you know, there, it is more of a recognized phenomenon. But at the time, I was totally, it was out of the blue.
And what happened to you?
Well, do you mean in terms of how I felt?
Yeah, how did you feel?
Yeah. Well, the best way I can describe it is total lack of pleasure and happiness. I didn't feel sad per se. I just felt completely blah and drained. I had no motivation to do anything. I had almost no attention span. My body felt, I was lethargic. I just wanted to sleep. Sort of this vague feeling of dread. It's really awful. It's a terrible feeling. And, I think it's hard to describe if you haven't experienced it yourself, or if, someone close to you hasn't experienced it. It's so much more, it's a whole different animal from a bad mood or feeling kind of down in the dumps. It's so much different and so much worse.
And for people who have experienced depression or love someone who has, it's hard to recognize at first for a lot of people.
Yeah.
These things change, they go on for a while, but it's difficult to create that awareness where you say, wait a minute, there's something wrong.
Yeah, because I think at first you might attribute it to something else that might be going on. You know, maybe, maybe I'm feeling a little lousy about the fact that I weaned my daughters. Maybe that's sort of it's certainly a milestone, a rite of passage. So it occurred to me, okay, maybe I'm just feeling a little down about that. But then it got worse and worse, and I knew, because I had had depression before. I thought, this is the big D, as I sometimes call it. This is the beast. I think for a lot of people, if they haven't had it before, they might just feel like, I'm kind of in a rut. I'm kind of feeling down. But, if it slides into severe depression, that's when I think it's so important for people to get help.
What did you do to get help?
Well, I saw my doctor, who I hadn't actually seen in a while. I mean, I checked in with her before I was pregnant, but I talked to her, and I ended up getting an adjustment in my medication. I'd been taking a low dose of Prozac throughout my pregnancy and my girl's first year. I had tried at an earlier point to go off of antidepressants, and that hadn't gone terribly well. So, my doctor said there's a very low risk with medications like depression. So it seemed like it was, the risks of going off it were higher than the risks of that of to my unborn babies and to when I was nursing. So I adjusted my medication, and that seemed to help me feel better. But what actually ended up happening, the story I tell in the book, is that I had another episode of depression a few months later, and then another, and each time my doctor was increasing my dosage a little bit, and it seemed to help, and I would feel better. But then I would get hit with another episode really just out of the blue. And what we eventually figured out was that what was going on was I was cycling, and I was having, I actually started having some little minor highs in between. And then there was one high that was so high that I felt almost euphoric. And I thought, this is weird. This is something strange is going on. I didn't feel manic, but I felt really, really good. And with my doctor, we recognized that I had moved on to the bipolar spectrum. So what I was actually diagnosed with was bipolar 2, which is kind of different from the classic bipolar because there aren't those really extreme manic episodes, but depression is the primary symptom, but it's multiple incidents of depression that are severe and that seem to come out of nowhere. So that was what was going on with me, and I don't know if it would have happened anyway, even if I hadn't gotten pregnant. Or sometimes I feel like the double dose of hormones in my system just kind of, who knows, rewired my brain a little bit. So it was a long journey and a difficult one.
But. Well, the way you write about this depression too, and I don't know, you don't intimately really tell the story of your earlier bouts of depression, but I can imagine a lot of mothers who and parents who suffer from depression feeling even more frustrated by their depression because they can see the joy that they're missing.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, that was really one of the hardest things about it. I felt sad about the fact that I was depressed because I felt like I was missing out on my daughters and I couldn't be there for them and be engaged with them the way I wanted to be. And, you know, babies, kids, they grow up so fast, you don't want to miss any of it. And I felt like I was missing it. And that was heartbreaking when it happened. And I also, you know, I wasn't the greatest mom, I didn't feel like, when it was going on because I was short-tempered. I was, you know, I couldn't really be there and be who I wanted to be.
And it from reading your work, it sounds like you felt like you were going through the motions. Even if the children didn't feel like you were going through the motions, you felt that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just sort of trying to, it was survival mode. You know, and so much of parenting is, you know, you do what you got to do, but yeah, it's lousy when you don't feel present and you feel like you're just doing the bare minimum. And, you know, this is another place where I went looking for a book again because I'm a nerd and that's what I look for when I'm going through something. And I couldn't find any sort of memoir or even that many sort of resources for parenting through depression. I wrote a blog post about it when I was going through it, and that was, you know, that was back in 2007, and I still get comments on that post, people saying, thank you for this post. I Googled parenting and depression, and your blog post was the first thing that came up. And, you know, so that's another reason I tell that story in my book, because I hope it's comforting or helpful in some way to other parents who have dealt with parenting and depression, whether they have twins or one kid or whatever, because it's a really hard thing, but it really helps to know that there are other people out there who've done it and get through it, and they can too if they get help.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, there is a lot more information. I mean, postpartum depression was something that wasn't talked about for years. And in recent years, there has been a lot of talk about postpartum depression, which doesn't necessarily make it a lot easier to deal with it when it happens. But
at least it
makes people who are experiencing it feel like they're not alone.
Definitely.
But this part of depression, as a parent, really is kind of new to the conversation.
Yeah, there isn't as much out there about it. You're right that there's there are wonderful resources and a wonderful community of support out there for parents with women who've gone through postpartum depression. There's a great website called Postpartum Progress that's just fantastic for that. But yeah, once you get into the later years, toddlers with depression, you know, when you're depressed and dealing with toddlers and their tantrums and their craziness, it's serious.
Definitely.
It is rough.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest is Jane Roper. She's the author of the new book, Double Time, How I Survived and Mostly Thrived Through the First 3 Years of Mothering Twins. She's also a blogger, and you can read her work on Babbel.com. Her blog is called Baby Squared. And Lauren is on the line from Waterloo. Hi, Lauren.
Hi there.
Hi, and you're the mother of twins?
Yes, I have an older child. I had a singleton first, and then I have 3-year-old twins right now. And so I'm constantly able to compare the two experiences, but the most striking differences I saw was during the pregnancy itself and how people treated me once they found out I was having multiples.
So give me some examples.
Well, it seems like people's filter kind of comes off when they find out you're having multiples. And they ask more intimate questions than they did when I was pregnant with my oldest child, and what sort of delivery methods I planned on, and, you know, how did I come to be in this state? And they want to know all these sort of personal medical details, and they could have been friends, but most of the time they were people in the grocery store or,
yep,
you know, people at work and clients. And so I kind of found that whole process to be just surprising, that people just seem to just be a lot more intimate and into your more personal life when they find out you're having twins, and they expect you to be forthcoming in return, too.
Absolutely, yeah. I know, I had that experience exactly, and it's strange. And, you know, it's nice in a way, because it's kind of cool that they're fascinated. But I mean, there were times when I was really put off by it, and I just, you know, felt like, oh, gosh, just leave me alone. Just say congratulations and, you know, leave it at that. It is funny how, yeah, people feel this almost, you know, license to get very personal about it. There's definitely, for as common as twins, you know, how much more common they are now, there's still this fascination. It's interesting.
Well, I was just going to ask both of you that. I mean, the fascination must continue. That's why we're talking about it today, honestly, you know, because for those of us who don't have twins, the idea of having twins seems a little overwhelming. Lauren, do you feel like the fascination continues?
Oh, yes. I mean, we're still constantly, you know, for the first 4 or 5 months, we really couldn't go to a store. And, you know, Waterloo is not a small community, but we couldn't go to a store without risking, like, okay, how are we going to keep people away from the stroller? And how are we going to keep people from talking to them? And if you have a singleton first, you have to, you know, it's very hard on them for their siblings to just all of a sudden get this huge wrath of attention when they've been this only child getting the attention for so long. So that's a struggle, too. But even now, we'll visit our oldest son's school, and we'll have them with us, and it's just like you're flogged with all these people and questions, and it is definitely a constant fascination still.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Lauren, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks.
Jane, one of the other things that you write about, and I just love this, as your girls matured and their personalities emerged, it was almost surprising to you how incredibly different they are.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I mean, it is a funny thing. I don't know why, you know, I should assume that because they were twins, they should be alike in any way, but because they're fraternal twins, so they're genetically as different as any two siblings. But, you know, you'd think that two kids brought up so closely might sort of mirror and mimic each other, you know, and maybe they do to some extent. But, yeah, it's been fun watching their different personalities emerge, and their, you know, their temperaments are very different, and the things they're interested in. Right now, one of my girls, Elsa, is really into drawing and art and making stuff, and the other one, Cleo, she loves pretend play, and she's sort of whimsical in this way, and, you know, her imagination, she really gets into creating little scenarios and stories. But, you know, and also just in the way they see the world and in the way they treat people and approach people. Elsa's right, you know, she's definitely an extrovert. Cleo's definitely an introvert, which is interesting. People make that assumption about twins, too, that one's going to be more extroverted and one's going to be more introverted. It happens to be true in our case, but it's certainly not true in all kids' you know, all kids' case, all twins.
Well, maybe you aren't the person who coined this term, but you use it, and it seems just perfect for what you're talking about, twin yang.
Oh, yeah, that's my term. I want to copyright that.
Okay.
I've never heard anyone else use it. It's probably been used. But, yeah, twin yang is this phenomenon that we witnessed where when one of the girls was really having a rough time, being, you know, a pain in the neck, really, you know, crying a lot, being whiny, whatever, the other one would mercifully, blessedly tend to be in a decent mood. And and then they would flip, you know, then it would be the other way around. One of them would be going through a phase of clinginess or neediness, and then the other one would be, you know, very independent and happy. And we saw this again and again, and we wondered, why is this happening? Is it sort of this unconscious thing they're doing where they're balancing out, where, you know, the one who needs more attention is being fussier and the other one's sort of pulling back and being like, okay, you know, I'm going to let her get what she needs and I'm going to, you know, take care of myself. Who knows? We came up with all kinds of crackpot scientific theories as to why this might be the case. But
well, you were talking about how different their personalities are. Do you find that they have traits that work well to complement each other? Do they sort of cooperate, although they're not thinking about it in that way, of course?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, they certainly fight and clash a lot, too. I think the fact that one of them that Elsa tends to blaze ahead and Cleo tends to hang back a little, I think that's sort of useful in a way. Sometimes Elsa ends up being the ambassador of the two and is almost protective of her sister. And I think that can be a nice compliment. But I think it might also be tricky. I think there might be times when Cleo feels like, all right, come on, you know, you don't have to go, you know, blazing forward and telling everyone my name and, you know, let me do my own thing. I do know that one of the things that's great is that Cleo makes Elsa laugh, and Elsa seems to find Cleo just hilarious. She thinks she's, you know, everything she does is funny. So that's nice. She's got her little own personal comedian.
Catherine is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi. What did you want to add today?
Well, I wanted to say that I read the book and I enjoyed it so much. I found it candid and poignant and just really, really laugh out loud funny.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to add that I'm a mom of singletons, and I wanted to say that the book is just really terrific for parents of singletons as well. And one thing I appreciated was this window into the experience of multiples, parenting multiples. So the challenges that I think parents of singletons would just, it wouldn't necessarily occur to us or things that we would take for granted. Like, for example, the challenge of being able to enjoy the girls as individuals.
Yeah, that's definitely, thank you, first of all. I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. And I've loved hearing from people who don't have twins that they like it too and can actually relate to a lot even though they don't have twins. But yeah, I mean, that's true. One of the tough things is getting that one-on-one time, and we still struggle with it. Mostly it happens these days by, you know, one of us will go out to the grocery store with one and one will go to the Home Depot with the other one. You know, we'll divide and conquer for errands, but it's really hard to find that time for real experiences. Although I think that's probably hard for anyone with more than one child. But I think it's, you know, particularly with twins, especially when they're little, you're always sort of dealing with them in parallel. So it is hard to have that one-on-one time. And it's hard not to compare them, honestly, because they're, again, you know, you've got this matched set in a way, even though they're not matched at all. Sometimes you can't help comparing them. When they were babies, and you may recall this incident in the book, one of them inevitably smiled first. So then all of a sudden we're thinking, oh gosh, is something wrong with the other one that she's not smiling? And, you know, does this mean, you know, we're not going to have a meaningful relationship with her? Does it mean there's some kind of developmental problem? And, you know, I think maybe parents of singletons, with your first kid, you worry about this stuff, and then when the second one comes along, you're like, oh, you know, whatever. We know it'll be fine, and this is how things go.
Right. Well, Jane, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Jane Roper is the author of Double Time, How I Survived and Mostly Thrived Through the First 3 Years of Mothering Twins. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. I'm Charity Nebbie.